This is All India Radio. In the weekly program Current Affairs, we now bring you a discussion on India's foreign relations. The participants are B.S. Prakash, former diplomat, Professor Gulshan Sachdeva of Jawaharlal Nehru University, and Nilova Roy Chaudhary, journalist, who initiates and moderates the discussion.
We are talking today about the directions that Indian foreign policy is taking after a spate of visits, particularly over the last fortnight. We've had some very, very high-level visits happening. President Ashraf Ghani of Afghanistan was here, the U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, the Prime Minister of Italy, the President of Armenia, three sets of royals from Bhutan to Belgium to the Prince of Wales. So India has suddenly become the destination to come to, despite all the fog and smog. What, Ambassador Prakash, would you think that this indicates for the direction that Indian foreign policy is going in, or the engagements that Indian foreign policy is seeking to make?
I would say that for some time now, the Indian foreign policy, the Indian approach has been multi-vectoral or multi-directional. At one level, at a very basic level, it is a manifestation of India playing a dynamic role and of its importance in the world. One can see it in terms of bilateral relationships, a set of various bilateral relationships, particularly in the neighborhood. You can also see it in terms of the role that India can place in a regional context. And third, but equally important, there are many global issues such as terrorism or non-proliferation or climate change or globalization, trade, in which the voice of India, the position of India is important. So if you were to look at important countries in the world, whether in terms of G20 or a set of, let's say, 10 countries whose voice and opinion matters, then India would figure. So you mentioned a number of visits specifically. So India has a role to play in the region, in the immediate neighborhood, hence Afghanistan, hence Bangladesh, and hence a series of others. For instance, in Europe, where some of the visits that we have had may be from not such great powers, erstwhile great powers, but even from relatively smaller players, the engagement with India is important because India has that weight and influence. And finally, with any country, even with a very small country, there are 193 countries or so in the UN, but if every country is affected by the kind of global issues that I mentioned, and there India's approach, India's opinion, and also interaction with countries is of interest. And as you said in the very beginning, it is also the season, smog notwithstanding. So therefore, this is not sudden. Every year, I think between November and from my diplomatic experience, this is a busy season. A part of it is that, but a part of it, as I said, is also the role that India plays in the world.
Professor Sachdeva, would that be a fair assessment? Do you think that that would be a correct assessment of the way to view the huge number of incoming visits that have been happening of late? Nowadays, I don't think it's just confined to winter anymore. I think the Indian summer also beckons people. Sure. But the fact that the European Union summit happened recently, Prime Minister of Italy came after a decade, the President of Armenia, which I thought was quite fascinating the first time ever. What do you make of these particular visits?
All visits are important. And I broadly agree with Ambassador Prakash. Now, India's role in global affairs obviously is increasing. Now, if one looks at, say, in the last 10-15 years, there are certain linkages why this is happening. Now, I would actually try to link with the Indian economy and Indian foreign policy in the broad sense. In the last 25 years, our growth rate has been average 7% plus. Now, this kind of high growth for 25 years obviously will have strategic consequences. So as a result, what you can see now, in the last 15-17 years, we have signed something around 30 plus strategic partnerships. Similarly, we have signed about 15 or so comprehensive economic cooperation agreements, and another 15 plus are under negotiation. Now, obviously, these kind of linkages, whether you have certain strategic partnerships or you have these kind of FTAs, they all have certain institutional mechanism to then follow it up. So some of those things one has to really link with that. Because, you know, once you have a strategic partnership, you have every year, every 2 years, certain summit level meeting, something else, foreign minister meeting. So in that sense, I would say that India's role and India's capacities have increased. At the same time, as a result of higher growth, India is also becoming very important player in global development architecture. So India has also started playing significant roles in development cooperation, whether within South Asia, which of course you look at Afghanistan, Bhutan, Bangladesh, going to Central Asia, Southeast Asia, and of course a major role in Africa. So all these engagements, I think, would have to be now handled by our foreign policy makers. So how do you really manage it? Obviously, more and more engagements at a bilateral level, at regional level, at the same time also at the global level, as Ambassador has mentioned. As you mentioned, you had India-EU summit. Then we are going to have India-ASEAN summit. And within those regions also, you have certain strategic partnerships, you know, like within EU, you have with UK, France and Germany. Similarly, also within ASEAN, you also have with now Indonesia, with Malaysia, with Vietnam and other countries, with Singapore. So it means now all these kind of engagements are a reflection of growing weight of India in global affairs and also in regional affairs. I think all these visits one has to put in that perspective.
For me, Ambassador Prakash, one of the most interesting things that has happened in the last couple of weeks is the idea of a revival of this quadrilateral of democracies, the USA, Japan, Australia and India partnership, which we have agreed to. And I think Prime Minister's visit to the ASEAN and East Asia summits is going to carry that forward. What, in your mind, does this particular quadrilateral symbolize? What are the indicators from this particular engagement?
I think it's conventional but also convenient to say that the world is in transition. But having said that platitude, I think it is a fact that there is a kind of dynamics today which is unpredictable in the world. And the paradigm, when we talk of the international order, what is the paradigm? Is it unipolar? Is it the G2 or the great powers 2 or the hyperpowers 2 in terms of the US and China? Or is it a multipolar order? And we in India, I think for some time now, have been saying that the multipolar order in terms of several poles in the world having their own weight, perspective, influence is a desirable and to some extent a natural order. That it cannot be any longer just the US as the one hyperpower. It is not desirable that the US and China, between the two of them, will be regarded as the two hegemons and will define the world order, but it will be others too, such as the European Union, Japan, India too, with its weight and with its influence and its perspective, is a pole. So seen in that context, in today's scenario, there is a certain process. And in that process, I think we must recognize that China has an aspiration to be a leading player in Asia-Pacific, perhaps in the world, in Asia-Pacific in the coming 10 years, 20 years, and by 2050 in the world. China also has a certain world view in terms of connectivity, regional connectivity, in terms of the economic order, and so on. And China domestically, within its own structure, represents certain values. One-party system, authoritarian kind of a regime, not necessarily inclusive or universal in some ways. This is a criticism that we have been making openly, and therefore I am voicing it. I say all this because you asked me about the Quad. Now, when we look at the Asia-Pacific or Indo-Pacific, or when we look at, let's keep Latin America and Africa aside, but the European landmass, the Pacific and our own region, then there are certain countries which are democracies, which believe in transparency, inclusiveness, which believe in keeping the sea lanes open, for instance, to be specific, to have free and equitable trade, to really build new security structures and economic structures that are transparent, that are inclusive, to pull in other countries where they also have a sense of sharing instead of acquiring huge debts. So I think there is a certain contestation in terms of ideas. And in that broad context, and all this is really also geopolitical rivalry, let's face it. So in that context, the coming together of Japan, Australia, India and the US, which has these attributes of democracy, transparency, inclusiveness, a rule-based order, a rule-based trading regime, it would be a kind of a consolidation of a certain view, and which will be contrasted with another kind of a view in which some of these qualities are missing. So I think it's work in progress. It has a military dimension, particularly with regard to maritime security. It has an economic direction, which we'll have to see with the Trump administration having given up some of the largest structures. We will have to see. So I think it's a coming together of like-minded countries, or an attempt to come together, which has to be seen in the context of a global order, in which is there going to be a multipolar order, or is there going to be consolidation with one or two powers on either side? So I think this is the process that we are engaged in. It's a highly significant strategic process. The beginning will be made again when the ministers meet in Manila. Pardon, the officials meet in Manila during this forthcoming meeting. So I would see the Quad as an idea which is slowly being put together, which is being realized. We have had some military exercise of a few countries in the past. And all this now acquires, to conclude what I am saying at this point, all this acquires greater salience after the 19th Congress of the Chinese Communist Party, because now you are getting a view in which there is a Chinese dream, a rejuvenation of China, and is that going to be hegemonic? Is it going to be kind of hierarchical, or is there going to be space for everybody? It is said that under the Pacific, many people, every country can thrive under the Pacific, but we will see. So these are the building blocks of like-minded people coming together to see that it is not one country's monopoly, either in security or in the economic, or let's say even in the political field. That's the way I would see it.
Right. Professor Sachdeva, the Belt and Road Initiative that President Xi has had included in the Constitution of China now, the fact that India refuses to be party to this particular economic arrangement, the fact that India is now a part of this quadrilateral of democracies, China has been kind of, for want of a better word, flexing its muscles a great deal, not just in the South China Sea, but Doklam was a particular example, and various other things in which they object to the defense minister going to Arunachal. So would they take India's joining this quadrilateral as an attempt at defiance or opposition, or would they take it in their stride?
One of the major foreign policy challenges which India is facing today or is going to face in the coming years is how do we really manage our relations with China. In fact, this kind of challenge is also to many other countries, but also to India as well. Because China is our neighbor, now it's also one of very important economic partner. At the same time, when, as mentioned, when security and economic architectures are evolving in Asia, China obviously would like to play a very important role in this evolving structures. So as India. So how do we really manage this? You mentioned One Belt, One Road or Belt Road Initiative. Now, I would look at it slightly differently. Now, One Belt, One Road has certain, whether we like it or not, this was an idea which has really fascinated many of the countries surrounding China. Look at Central Asia, look at even some of Southeast Asian countries, even within South Asia. So they have quite favorable opinion about One Belt, One Road at the moment. Now, India has taken a different position, particularly because of China-Pakistan Economic Corridor, because it passes disputed territory. But as mentioned, I think it has two dimensions. One, clearly it has a geopolitical dimension, which cannot be ignored. So one has to respond to that accordingly. But it also has developmental dimension to this. Now, how do we really manage this? Take certain advantage from the kind of investment China is going to make in this region, because ultimately we are also trying to integrate our economy within Asian area. And you know, all our integration agreements, also when you look at ASEAN, look at within South Asia, so we also have to integrate. At the same time, one also have to realize that China is also number one trading partner of so many countries. So it's in the China's interest really to invest in some of these areas, which they are going to do anyway. So how do we really take advantage from this while keeping our strategic and other concerns known to China, and how do we really protect that? I think this is the challenge. Say, if we have certain problems with China-Pakistan Economic Corridor, which we have clearly articulated, but I think most of the debate I see in India has concentrated more on the geopolitical aspect of OBOR and also on CPC. But many other corridors, you look at what is happening in, say, Central Asia corridors, because our economic linkages with Central Asia are very, very limited. So we are not going, there's no point for us really going to invest into this area. But China is doing it. Can we take advantage from this? And in the long run, what perhaps I can see is that many of those initiatives, infrastructure linkages initiative which India is taking from international north-south corridors to Chabahar port and many others, and also our connectivity programs with Southeast Asian countries, and what is happening, the kind of investment China is making in Asia particularly, because core of One Belt, One Road is in Eurasia. Of course, there are 60, 70 countries from Africa to Europe, and they are trying to link China mainly with Europe because this is what, there are huge trade things happening there. So I think we also need to be careful, how do we really deal with China? And how do we really take advantage from the kind of investment China is making in this region? Yes, in certain areas, this kind of quadrilateral, what actually is happening, would also give a signal to China that if they do not listen to other players, then there could be problems for China. Because if all of them actually come together, then it's a kind of a nightmare scenario for China, which actually China would not like to be in this kind of situation. In both ways, how do we are going to manage this kind of rise of China is going to be a major challenge. And I think this is the way I would look into this situation.
Ambassador Prakash, Japan has also mooted this idea of the Asia-Africa growth corridor, which Prime Minister Modi also quite enthusiastically welcomed and have decided to collaborate in. The fact that the Belt and Road Initiative has led to a kind of financial situation in countries like Sri Lanka, Pakistan is talking about it in the context of the CPEC, that they become so indebted to China that they lose whatever semblance of independence they had because of the financial burden that is imposed on them. So this Belt and Road Initiative, the fact that Japan and India are mooting something like this Asia-Africa growth corridor, it almost comes into a direct kind of a conflict region. I mean, it's always good to have more infrastructure, but how does India manage this scenario? Professor Sachdeva talked about the need to manage it. How does India manage a scenario, what apparently is being offered by India and Japan and maybe now the United States, is a much better option financially for the smaller countries than what the Belt and Road Initiative seems to suggest?
I entirely agree with what Professor Sachdeva said, that Belt Road Initiative has certain strategic aspects on which we may have reservations, but it also is a huge infrastructural and economic project in which there may be opportunities, which is huge in scope. It covers the entire European landmass, and that we need to analyze it. It's not a question of just what happened was a meeting, the launch of the Belt Road Initiative. It is not just a meeting or a forum. It is going to be a lot of activity. And many of these activities are, there are elements in it which might be useful for us, which might be opportunities for us. There are elements which are challenges for us. So my own impulse in answer to your question, Ilva, is not to see these as competing or adversarial projects, let's say India, Japan, or any particular thing necessarily as a zero-sum game in which we do this or that. I mean, capital is a big thing, and China has so much of capital, so much of investment, so we need to look at it seriously. But I see that the problem in managing or in dealing or in our interactions with China, as I see it, is the following, in a very broad sense. India is too large a country in terms of demography, $2 trillion GDP. It's one of the 10 economies in the world, second largest population, huge country, different civilizational perspective. So we cannot be junior partners, or we cannot be in any sense a side player, a bit player in a large thing that is unfolding. So I think with China, there has to be an approach of sometimes
convergence, sometimes competition, sometimes cooperation, sometimes plain rivalry. This is inevitable because of the factor endowments of both countries, so large both of them, two huge civilizations. We will never really do it the way it can happen with a smaller country or with a junior partner. And at the same time, and I think we all realize it now, I think the story of the next few decades will be about what will happen between India and China. So I think a kind of acceptance of the Chinese number one position, whether it's Asia or in the world, is not natural, not desirable for us. Similarly, the perils that China might have when it deals with, let's say, the Hambantota project in Sri Lanka or something else of that nature, it's going to be very different with India. But at the same time, I think there should be sufficient maturity, and I think there is in India, for us not to be really, what are the core differences, what are the important differences, and how do we deal with in a dialogue with China, and what are the opportunities that it may provide, and what about the larger world order in which it all takes place? That's where the Quad idea comes in. That's where the meeting of the, which we will see in Manila, which the Prime Minister is attending in the next few days, our relations with the ASEAN, our relations with other Asian powers, which includes China, will come in. And therefore, I think we have to pursue many tracks. BIMSTEC, for instance. Since SAARC has yielded no results because of utter frustration because of the Pakistani intransigence, we are trying sometimes with another regional group like BIMSTEC. We are trying to do certain things with Bangladesh alone. So I think the dynamics, the nature of the Indian foreign policy challenge today is sometimes, as I said in the very beginning, sometimes bilateral, sometimes regional, sometimes it has to be global. Similarly with China, I would say, and this is, I think, what we are doing, frankly. I mean, that's why I think the Prime Minister engages every few months. The China and India are forced to, or it happens, that they engage at the highest level on the margins of so many other summits, sometimes bilateral. So I think it's inevitable that sometimes issues, there is cooperation, sometimes there is convergence, and also we have these real issues like Doklan and so on. So I would say that sometimes our people are saying, Foreign Secretary says sometimes, or Shiv Shankar Menon, one of our very capable diplomats, says, let's deal with the facts, deal with the reality on the ground and how to solve this particular issue now, rather than start with grand themes of finding alternatives to one particular approach. I think that is the reality of what's happening today.
There is a certain maturity that has come into Indian foreign policy. I mean, that is based on the reality of the situation as opposed to grand themes and the idealism that perhaps, for want of a better word, used to permeate earlier foreign policy narratives. Growing China is huge. China is our neighbor. We have to deal with it. But we also have a certain outreach with all of the countries, say, in Southeast Asia, with all of the countries in Africa, with the Latin American countries. These are places where China has already gone and spread its wings in a very large way. Pakistan is, of course, our major bone of contention or problem. Masood Azhar is this man who's a terrorist. The United Nations declares the organization as a terrorist organization, but this man, China refuses to designate as a global terrorist. But the Dalai Lama for China is this red rag. It's a very strange situation. So how, again, I keep coming back to the question of, I mean, India seems to have been playing its cards well. Is there a kind of a solution that can be arrived at bilaterally which allows both to kind of grow in their natural trajectories? Is that possible at all?
Well, everything is possible. That's what actually diplomacy, you never say this is over. So you keep doing it. Now, obviously, every country has certain interests. So China has its own interests, which they have articulated very clearly. We have our own interests and our positions on issues of, you know, in Pakistan, on terrorism. We have articulated very clearly to them as well as to the world community. Even on these larger issues which were mentioned, I mean, whether we can have an alternative project to, say, One Belt, One Road or any other kind of major initiatives. Now, what actually I have observed in the last 10-15 years, many large ideas have been floated, starting, say, for example, from Americans when they started New Silk Road Strategy, linking South Asia with Central Asia via Afghanistan. through all, you know, pipelines and networks and trade and transit. Similarly, then later on we have the Chinese project, and then we have our own some of those initiatives, as I mentioned, and also Asia-Africa Growth Corridor. Now, all these projects are good. Only thing is that if there are sufficient resources behind this, because what happened to New Silk Road strategy? We had a lot of talk, but very little money behind this. Now, at the moment, why One Belt, One Road is slightly more exciting for many countries in the region? Because China is also putting a lot of resources behind. On this, say, for example, Asia-Africa Growth Corridor, if India, Japan, and then some other partners, we are able to put together sufficient resources, I'm sure there'll be money takers of this project as well. And I think, as rightly mentioned by Ambassador Prakash, we don't have to really look at into the competing. In fact, in the long run, as I said, they would be actually complementary. I don't really see Chabahar port and Gwadar port really as competing ports. Because if both these ports are operational, in the long run, I think there is a sufficient volume of trade which can happen within this region. You know, they would become complementary ports in the long run. That will help both the ports and both the projects. This is the kind of message, how do we really get across? Because ultimately, even if we have Chabahar, but at the same time, shortest route to reach Afghanistan is via Pakistan. So it means we can't really give that option off the table. We continue working on this. We continue talking to China that know what you are doing, your positions on certain individuals in Pakistan, and the kind of nexus which have been built within Pakistan and China, which is not acceptable. We keep exposing them.
Ambassador Prakash, the fact that how well is India managing its foreign policy?
If you look at the trajectory of India and the Indian foreign policy, we must acknowledge and we must also be satisfied that India is a major player, a major power. What is a power? What is a great power? These are all theoretical issues. But in terms of weight, influence, GDP, military potential, certain capabilities in science and technology, from the nuclear to Antarctica to space, India is a country that counts more than before because of the size of the GDP and the improvements in science and technology. We must also be aware that India has limitations, because we still, with all of our efforts, do not live in a tension-free neighborhood. We have a perennial, either a nuisance or a problem, whichever way we call it, with Pakistan. We have a challenge in dealing with China. But we have a large number of friends because of a certain orientation of India in terms of foreign policy. So it is challenging times and exciting times for both Indian foreign policy and for Indian diplomats. And we have a new confidence, and I think we just have to carry on, but without a hyperbole. I think we should not. I do not like people who say that India has arrived, it's a great power, it will be the... These appellations are unnecessary. We have reached a certain potential, we should be proud of it, but there is work to do and we should be engaged in it.
And that should be done quietly and the way that it's been going on.
It is natural for us to speak about what we are doing, but we should not get into all the time two mistakes we do, in my view, as a person who has been in diplomacy. One is to regard everything in terms of either a win or loss. Mm-hmm. Diplomacy is not like that. It's a process of engagement. You look at outcomes rather than, you know, victories and defeats. And the second thing is sometimes we get into this hyperventilating about where we have reached. I think we haven't reached that stage yet, and we need not.
Thank you so much, Ambassador Prakash and Professor Sasdeva.
You were listening to a discussion on India's foreign relations. The participants were B.S. Prakash, former diplomat, Professor Gulshan Sachdeva of Jawaharlal Nehru University, and Nilova Roy Chaudhary, journalist, who initiated and moderated the discussion. This program was produced and presented by the News Services Division of All India Radio. You can also listen to this program on our website newsonair.nic.in. You may email your opinion about this program at airnsdtalks@gmail.com.